Star Trek 57, M23, take two.
It's got Star Trek, episode 23. DS9 season 5, episode 8. Things Past.
I'm listening, but I don't have much time.
You are about to make a very serious mistake.
Because you're innocent, of course, all of you.
That's right, and I can prove it. Compare this attack to recent bombings on Bajor. You'll find a similarity to four incidents in Musila province, none of which we could have done.
This proves nothing. And under Cardassian law, the accused must prove his innocence. Since the evidence in this case is sufficient to warrant conviction, the investigation is over.
Your job is to find the truth, not obtain convictions.
Truth. You want the truth? All right, the truth is that none of you would be accused, none of you would even be here if the Bajorans weren't fighting the Cardassians. It's futile. The occupation has lasted for 50 years, and it will probably last another 50.
I wouldn't be too sure about that.
Why not just accept it? If the Bajoran people would accept their place in history, none of this would be happening.
We are talking about the attempt on Gul Dukat's life, not the socio-political ramifications of the resistance.
It's all part of the same problem. When your people resort to terrorism and violence,
they're fighting against order, against stability, against the rule of law, and this must be stopped.
There is more to life than the rule of law. It has been my observation that only the guilty make that kind of statement.
Say something funny, Dan.
Oh my gosh, every time I say...
All this pressure.
I keep trying to say something.
All right, like what?
I don't know. Every time I came up with something, Jesse interrupted me. Jesse, why don't you say something funny?
What do you mean every time?
Every time I was going like, and then he'd start going, oh, and then I was like, he did it again. He did it again. And then, because at one point I started saying, well, blah, blah. And like, as I did it, you were like, you better say something funny, Jan. Jan.
I'm going to zip it.
No, don't zip it.
I'm going to wait for you to say something.
I'm cool, man. Don't zip
I'm gonna
it.
I'm going to take a deep breath.
And you're going to zip it.
I'm going to listen for what you have to say.
So this episode was Things Past, Star Trek Enterprise.
Okay. Wait a minute.
Is this some very complicated
I don't
gag?
Believe there was any Enterprise in this episode at all.
Well, right. I mean, it's just the name of the show.
I don't know about that.
Oh, it's not Enterprise?
Yeah.
Which one did you watch?
Well, I thought it was Things Past, you know, with Star Trek DS9 Enterprise.
I don't get it.
Well, I kind of fucked it up. Never mind. God damn it.
All right.
This
so,
episode was directed by LeVar Burton.
This episode, Things Past, Deep Space Nine, Season 5, Episode
Oh, it's DS9.
Eight, yes, DS9.
I thought only Scott Bakula could quantum leap.
Okay, I get it. I get where you were going now. Yeah, that was a long way, but it was good.
And I fucked it up because I said Star Trek DS9 Enterprise.
Yeah.
That fucked it all up.
Yeah.
I'm really upset because I was really proud of that one.
Inserted a certain amount of confusion into the into the whole
thing. Yeah, it was
a good joke has a lot of confusion.
But like a purposeful confusion.
Yeah.
A red herring.
That's how comedy is created.
Yeah. But yes, LeVar Burton. That's great. A good old Geordi LaForge.
Wait, what did LeVar Burton?
Oh, he directed.
LeVar Burton directed it.
Oh.
So, Things Past.
music by Jay Chataway.
DS9, Season 5, Episode 8, I think?
Yes. 1996.
Last week we did... welcome to the It's Got Star Trek podcast, by the way. Typically professional opening. Last week we did Year of Hell, Voyager, Season 4, Episodes 8 and 9. And this came out the year before, so... Kurtwood Smith had a couple years here in Star Trek where he was doing stuff. He was on Year of Hell, and he was in this episode, which is pretty cool.
And Star Trek VI.
And Star Trek VI in 1991.
Yeah.
Which was that's the last few podcasts we've done.
It's the last three of the four podcasts we've done.
Yeah.
Has Kurtwood Smith in it. This time playing the role of Kurtwood Odo.
Kurtwood Odo.
Yeah.
Thrax.
Yeah. Thrax.
So
Kurtwood Odo.
Last time he was Kurtwood president.
He kept calling him like President Kurtwood.
President Kurtwood. That's right.
And then, anyway. Kurtwood.
People listen to it. They know what we said.
Kurtwood Time Psycho.
Kurtwood Time Psycho. But nuanced Time Psycho.
Yeah.
In this episode, he played a more... I mean, it was very good, and it was a very important role, but it was interesting because he was, of course, the lead antagonist in Year of Hell. But in this particular episode, it's more, I don't know, it's difficult to describe because he's not an antagonist, but he sort of is. He's Odo's antagonist, like representation of himself as an antagonist kind of thing, right?
Yeah. Yeah, right, because he isn't actually there in the real... In the real timeline, he's not really there.
And, you know, what I thought was pretty brilliant about his performance that I had not really noticed before. I've always liked this episode. I really enjoyed the overall story that we're about to get into. But before we start all that out, I just wanted to note that he's doing Rene Auberjonois' Odo character. I mean, he is.
Yeah.
He's really doing an impersonation of Odo, which I had not really noticed before.
Yeah, he was even down to the scoffing.
When and stuff like that.
Yeah, and sort of like the approach. He's saying things like, "It's been my experience that people who skirt the law believe that or whatever." You know, just right. Sort of like Odo-ish kind of.
That is an Odo thing to say.
Yeah, and kind of Odo is weird because he's weird. He's calm and kind of emotionless, but he gets so grumpy and so
yeah.
How does that count on the emotion scale, right? Because some people, can you say someone's emotional if their only emotion is grumpiness? Because it seems like they have no emotion. They're just generally grumbly. And that doesn't seem like an emotion, but it is. Because behind all that grumpiness is a deep hurt, you know?
So. Yeah, and of course, it's the ability to hide all other emotions except for the grumpiness.
Right.
Or being willing to show the grumpiness because it doesn't affect them, their insecurities or psychologies or something like that.
Yeah, because you know, emotions can't be created or destroyed. And your grumpiness
can reach a level where it's, you know, you're more animated and much more emotional about your grumpiness, or it can just be like
and it can be comfortable, no doubt. Yeah. It can be a comfortable, and especially if you have insecurities and are nervous around people because most of your life people have treated you like shit.
Yeah,
so like either nice shit or bad shit, but shit nevertheless. Yeah. Anything that helps keep people at a distance from you, both emotionally and even physically, you can understand that being a sort of a self-defensive psychology character trait to take on.
I don't know if it was Star Trek, but I feel like at some point I heard someone reference that, someone say that the term changeling was kind of derogatory, but I don't know if I'm just making that up in my head because it sounds derogatory. It sounds derogatory, but it's not because they use it casually. Even like the Dr. Bashir says something about like, I guess you're not the only changeling in the area, or you're not fully solid. That's what it was. He was like, I'm fully solid.
Yeah.
And he's like, you're not, apparently not.
Yeah,
so changeling.
I don't think it's derogatory in the changeling? Star Trek world to say changeling, because that's sort of what they call these folks.
Yeah,
yeah. It just seems something about that seems like
in other worlds and universes, changeling can be like something different and more like medieval Earth.
Well, it's a term from mythology, from some sort of a Celtic and
it's Britannic like if you're like, you know, half fairy or something,
right.
Or some fairies took you away and they brought you back, and as a baby or something.
So it's like. Okay, those games, Workshop games like Warhammer and stuff, don't they have like a race of characters called race of creatures called Nurglings or something? Nurglings?
Dude, damn. Come on.
Snotlings.
Snotlings.
Oh my god, that's even worse.
Yeah, Snotlings.
That they're sounds like, they're like little orcs.
Well, they're tiny, tiny, tiny. They're smaller.
Tiny goblins.
They're smaller than goblins and they hang out with ogres. But yeah, so Ing, it just seems like a you know, you're a Fergaling.
Yeah, yeah.
You're a humanling.
I think in our culture that quizzling. It does have sort of negative.
You're just a purseling, personling.
A poisonling.
That doesn't really work.
Well, so for context,
a guiling.
This is season 5, right? And
still alive.
As part of the events of this season, leading into this episode, prior to it, I should say, Odo, as a punishment for killing one of his own kind back in, I believe it was, you know, season 3, wasn't it?
Season 3?
I'm just providing some historical context for Odo's situation.
He's like frozen in a human form.
So he was judged by the founders, the changelings.
It was called Broken Link, season 4, episode 25.
Yeah. And that's when they decided to make him a solid, basically, you know, a regular old human.
Solid.
Because not that kind. He had previously, the season before, had killed in self-defense, and to be fair to him, he had killed another changeling, but apparently that had never been done before. I don't know if that's just changeling propaganda or not, but according to them, it had never happened before. So they eventually caught up to him, and as punishment, they turned him into a solid. And that's the state we find him in now. And I think what's helpful for the sort of, you know,
solid state.
The cool thing about Deep Space Nine is most episodes you can still jump into and watch in an episodic fashion, but they did, of course, go much more serialized than prior Trek incarnations had gone.
Yeah, definitely.
And what's happening in this episode is he's already been dealing, you know, from the beginning of season 5, he's already been dealing with the trials and tribulations of now being a solid, and he's morose, and he's become much more sort of bitter, and also I think a little bit more introspective in some ways, although maybe not willingly so.
But he doesn't have to go into a bucket every night.
Yeah, although he also learned that he didn't have to do that either, because it turned out as long as he just changed his shape a lot, right? So that's the other thing. Yeah. Like Odo's whole arc is one of self-discovery, and that a lot of that self-discovery was prevented by other people, but it was also in some ways prevented by him, because the reason he had to go in the bucket was that he was holding that humanoid form all day, and that stressed his morphological enzymes out. So that's why he had to go in the bucket. He later found out if he just changed shape into like various different things throughout the day, he'd be cool.
Yeah, that seems like a case. At first, I thought he had to go in the bucket because the idea was that all his shit got tired and had to just lay out and relax and be cool. But that's not really it. It's more like being cramped. That's much cooler than having to be, because I mean that's a really he's really nerfed if like that is the case. Yeah. You know,
and the thing is, and you have to factor in that he had discovered that, as I recall, prior to being made into a solid. So in addition to all the other things you might expect, it would be problematic if your physical being was transformed. He's also basically feeling trapped 100% of the time. He can't do any of the new things that he discovered that he could really do and enjoy. And it also impacted, or he believed initially, it impacted his ability to do his job, because he always thought that being a changeling was an advantage, which of course it was. But, you know, they had a few episodes that indicated to him that no, in fact, he was quite capable of being a very good investigator without that ability.
Yeah.
What about like eating and going to the bathroom and stuff?
Yeah, and jerking off. These are all things that he had to discover.
Well, so it says, I guess it says some episodes say 18 hours he had to that he could stay, you know, in one form. Others say 16. But I guess we don't want to go too far down this line, but what bad is going to happen to Odo if he stays there too long? He'll just turn into a pile of sludge. Can he lose himself? Can he lose bits of himself? Or is it like T-1000 where he can turn into liquid goo and all the parts go flying, but all the liquid metal homes in on its pappy mommy?
I think he probably just like melts into a gross puddle on the floor, and that's sort of embarrassing. Because everything about Odo is he wants to have control, and he wants to be right. You know, that comes up a lot in this episode too. He wants to at all costs, he just wants to make sure that he's doing the right thing.
Yeah, because he's sick of being told he's a piece of shit. So he picked one road he could go that jives with most people. Yeah. Most people, even if you're kind of against the law, you get, it's like, okay, well, I get it. And it's a way for people to hate him, and he can sort of relish in that, you know, he can relish in hatred, or at least deflect it in a certain way, because he can say, oh, well, you just hate that I believe in something this strong and like I'm bringing you down. That's why you hate me. Not because you think I'm a piece of shit. You just hate what I do. And so he can kind of deflect with that. But then on the other hand, he knows it's the path of your average status quo righteousness path or whatever is to follow the law or whatever.
Well, it's easy.
It's easy and simple. And so he knows he can do that. These are things. And
where people, he perceives it to be easy.
He perceives it to be as very basic rules, as opposed to having to sort of, improvise with other creatures that have all these weird sort of rules.
And that's the lesson that he learns in this episode, is that theory that, you know, just maintaining order, whatever the fuck that means, is not so simple as he perceived, because he thought you just check all the boxes and do everything according to, you know, like Cardassian law says the innocent have to provide evidence of their innocence.
Yeah, that's fucked up.
That's the rule, so that's fine.
Yeah, that's fucked up if you're in jail and
they
get
sentenced and then there's a trial to like justify the sentence.
It's not even to justify the trial, it's just to announce the sentence basically.
Yeah, because you can't
just announce it publicly because they already know what their sentence is.
So that's a path where the rich win, right? Because if you're in jail and you can't have anyone to do the sleuthing for you, you're absolutely fucked. Yeah. But if you're rich, you know, you can just pay it off and pay this, that, and all the other sorts of
things. But what's cool about this episode is it's a demonstration of how much Odo has grown over the years, even prior to us meeting him on Deep Space Nine. Of course, he's grown since the season one premiere, you know, Emissary. He's grown since then. But this episode indicates that there was, in fact, growth prior to that, which, of course, makes sense. Fucking human beings and humanoids, whatever. I'm being racist now against aliens. Everybody, sentient beings, in theory, have the possibility of growing over time and responding to their experiences. And this is an example of that we get to see.
Yeah, this is I was thinking about how this compares to Year of Hell, for example, and thinking if anyone would try to bring up the argument of, oh, well, this is like Year of Hell because it's almost like a reworking of the dream sort of episode, but it's not at all because there's consequences. Exactly. And those consequences, maybe it doesn't amount into a ship being blown up or people losing all their poo-poos all over the place. But it doesn't like Kira was like, oh man, you know, his whole shit. It's all his whole character was changed without any visible sort of changes. And that's the difference.
And without really it being cool. Something that he did in the course of a current story. So he had already, like the change had already occurred, the positive change. And he was hiding that from himself and from his friends. And he was here forced. His brain was basically forcing him to deal with this shit, with his guilt over this business because it was something unresolved.
He was reminded by it because they went to Bajor and they had that whole convention where they gave Garrick.
I think it was a conference.
Garrick got some insulting name tag, like former Cardassian oppressor.
Yeah, yeah, right.
Well, so right there at the beginning, I thought this is a great little intro to the show, and
it was very lighthearted exposition.
It was lighthearted exposition.
And it made you think a little bit.
Well, they
made you think.
Because everybody's hanging out on the runabout all like, yeah.
They're setting up, you know, we know all these characters very well, but for the purposes of this story, they're sort of setting up, you know, Garrick and Odo in some senses, not in a major sense, but in a slight sense as opposition, not to each other, but sort of opposing ideas, because Garrick is willing to go up there and be like, yeah, this is my deal. And I want to talk about this. And I'm getting annoyed that everyone's treating me like an asshole because you asked me my fucking opinion and I gave it to you and you all yelled at me.
Yeah,
whereas Odo is hiding all that, you know, Odo is trying to suppress all that and take the adulation, although he clearly seemed to be feeling a little guilty once he actually was getting all that adulation from these people about how great he was. And he's thinking like, fuck, man.
Yeah.
It was not that great.
Dax was all, she said, you may have worked for the Cardassians, but your only master was justice. Did you notice her? She said that master. She said like a Midwest thing. She goes that you may have worked for the Cardassians, but your only master was Justin. Justice. Sorry,
Justin.
My only master was Justin.
Shout out to our friend Justin out there.
And Sisko kind of was this dry sort of a legend is born.
Yeah, his whole episode is just, like Sisko saying wry comments.
Yeah, I know. Are you for real?
They had there was an extra sort of, I don't know, there's something about the way he was saying them. Like he's sort of like some of the words there was more like emphasis on the end of the word. He was all like, and there was like things like lasted longer and he had a little bit of sass.
I know exactly what you're talking about.
Yeah, even when he was talking to Odo about at the point where they first see Thrax and Garrick's all talking about, wait, that was 7 years ago. You weren't here then. Odo kind of writes it off. But the Sisko is all sort of talking to Odo like, how could this be? You know, how is it that this is happening? And who is this? And why is this happening this way? And like, Odo knows all along. But the way Sisko is saying it is almost as if it's like,
it's interrogative.
Interrogative. Does that mean like when you say
interrogating something?
Yeah. Interrogative. Okay, I get that now. Yeah, adjectified it.
Because Sisko is the one that we see sort of put things together. That like, okay, well, I don't know what's going on, but Odo is definitely at the center of it. So yeah. Odo, what's going
on? Odo's freaking out. Okay, well, first of all, so they're having that conversation, and one great thing in this episode, and they've done this elsewhere in Star Trek, but I think Deep Space Nine probably did it the most. They were the most comfortable with just not bothering explaining the gimmick that propels the plot, because they can rely on the fact that it doesn't matter. And that the vocabulary of Star Trek is sufficient that people would understand, all right, something's going on. Now we're using that framework to tell this particular tale.
Yeah, because and then you get to find out what kind of weird shit's happening. You already know that something weird's happening. Yeah. You already know it's Star Trek.
But you don't need to, you don't even find out about the EM storm or anything until later on, you know?
Well, it ends with Sisko going, you know, Legend is born, and then Odo's looking all uncomfortable, and then it goes, switches away to, you know, back at the space station.
Anyway, back at the station.
Anyway, back at the ranch. And then it switches back, and they're just out, and Worf is like, oh, shit. So, yeah, there was no, that was kind of jarring, not in a bad way. Yeah. I was just kind of like, whoa.
He was like, oh, some shit went down.
Yeah, right, but you're right, they didn't really need
and
to
And all
waste.
Of a sudden you see Worf, because, like, I've been watching the earlier episodes of Deep Space Nine, and I haven't gotten to this part yet recently, and all of a sudden I skipped ahead, and there's and like fucking Worf's there, and I'm like, oh, it's Worf.
Yeah, Worf seems cooler, but
looking all sexy in his red uniform, his command uniform.
Hell yeah.
They do spend some time though. They dedicate some time trying to sort of explain it a little bit. Dax is like, is some kind of cross dimensional transfer.
So here's the thing: there's
plasma anomaly, strong
vibrations.
Two
different things going on, right? There's them stuck in Odo's mind. And we'll, let's get to that in a second. But as far as the writers of the story are telling us through Bashir, right? Bashir and Worf are all talking in sick bay. One thing that was so wonderful in this episode is how many times people just said, I don't know.
Yeah.
Bashir just kept saying, like, I don't know. He's like, wish I could tell you. I don't know.
Yeah, at the risk of sounding redundant, I just don't
know. And the thing is of course he doesn't know. This is some, as we find out at the end, this is some crazy, bizarre, weird shit. And it would be almost annoying if he was like, well, it's the doodle-dee and it could be. He barely even speculated because he's just like, look, some weird shit's happening. I'm going to monitor this shit and we'll try to figure it out.
Because even the people that it's happening to, they're like, well, we're already familiar with weird stuff happening.
Yeah.
The point is, like, why is it happening, or how do we get out of it? Or, you know, it's not like, oh my God, weird shit's happening. Cause like they've already been on 100 adventures where weird fucking shit happens.
Well, and then when they get into, to your point, Dan, when they're in Odo's mind and they wake up on the promenade after doing a bunch of chemicals. I want to get some fucking
And
chemicals.
That was funny. Cause at first I was just thinking, huh, that's weird. They were just out because they quantum leapt into it. But apparently you find out later they went to the chemist and then got...
And that's the thing is that's what's cool about the writing of this episode is that everything has sort of like a dual... Not everything, but you know, it's a lot of that dual sort of stuff where you find out a little bit later.
They fell asleep on the promenade. How did they fall asleep on the promenade?
Because of those fucking chemicals.
Because of the drugs.
They were taking drugs on the promenade. I was thinking about that, what it must feel like to get, like, fall asleep in an alley when you're on a space station either.
Yeah.
Where's
Deep Space Nine?
Just leaning up against
some
fucking barrels and crates and shit.
What's considered a gutter there? I could imagine. Yeah. I mean,
I'm sure there's disused portions. Oh, well, so the thing
is thinking of like a Skyline Mall, which used to be an airport.
And so
you go down these hallways, I'm sure.
There's just little groups of Bajorans huddled in the shadows somewhere. So it's easy to.
Yeah,
but when they wake up, they immediately set to the problem solving. And again, this is great Star Trek because they recognize something's weird and they don't start like freaking out or crying or anything. They start going through the list of what do they know, which isn't much, and what are some possibilities, and shooting down, you know, possibilities through discussion and argument.
That's how they train you in Starfleet.
Yeah, and that's great. It's just a wonderful example of that.
It was interesting. They even went through the effort of saying, well, maybe we're in a holodeck, and then Cisco's like, computer end program. I guess that's
right. They're like, okay, well, it's not that.
And, but he made a point to address that.
To be even more nuanced, he didn't say, I guess that's not it. He just said, let's assume for now that that's not the case, which is the smart thing to do, because it still could be the case, or it could be Q, or it could be some other crazy
shit. You never know with a holodeck.
Well, you never know with Sisko, because like you were saying about his whole demeanor in the episode, you could also kind of take from that he's just kind of being snarky, but I don't know.
He probably meant
both. Right. I mean, he probably meant it. He's Sisko. He sounded kind of like attitude-y the whole time.
Well, and meanwhile,
not in a bad way, like in a fun way.
Odo's freaking out right from the fucking get-go. Odo's like, we gotta get the fuck off the station.
Yeah,
because he knows
Well, and so, all right. So we've all seen the episode probably multiple times. So obviously we know how it ends.
I've seen it three times.
I love the fact that this, it's sort of a twist ending, but the writers do not try to fucking trick you, right?
Right.
The writers give you every fucking clue. Like, you know, something's from the beginning.
Yeah, from the start, you know, they're not twisting at the end saying, oh, but then all the bloobity bloops, yeah. You know, it's like it was a dream or whatever this. Oh, they told you from the start that they're in this situation. And this is not like actually happening.
Like, you already know their bodies are back at Deep Space Nine in sick bay. And like, in, you know, you can see that they're there.
And you don't know if this is real history or imagined history, but you do know that Odo has something fucking to do with it because he's freaking out right the fuck away. Even before you see his fucking bloody ass hands when he's eating soup.
Yeah, that was weird. I thought he was having a changeling episode or something, but
he saw the ghost people.
Yeah, right. Which the ghost people were weird too, because the first time I saw one, it took me until the second episode to finally figure out that there was the ones that were murdered. Yeah. Like, oh yeah, but
they walk by and look over at them.
The first one, when I looked at that, it kind of made me. I know it wasn't Iggy Pop, but I looked at it and was like, is that Iggy Pop? It's not. It's some weird, creepy dude, though. Like,
Iggy Pop plays that awesome Vorta.
Right, yeah. So.
Oh, that's right.
Creepy guys.
He's on Deep Space Nine.
Yeah. So they tell you from the start, but it's also, they use the opportunity to sort of do more of like, Garrick's character is awesome because like they'll just randomly throw in... Maybe it's not random, but they'll just sort of sprinkle in some more secrets about him like during episodes.
Yeah.
So you learn more about Garrick every episode, it seems. Every episode he's in it, you know. A lot, you know, most episodes you don't learn something about every character during the show, even when characters are in it. Like, you didn't learn anything about Worf during this episode, but you usually learn things about the main characters. And Garrick was one of the main characters. But what was it? It was Odo, Garrick. You didn't learn anything about Sisko, you know. But Garrick, you always find something new about him.
You don't always know for sure if it's true or not.
Right.
You know, because he'll say shit that sounds like he's saying shit, but it's revealing shit. But then it turns out later he's like being misleading in that respect. Not so much in this episode, but he does do that sometimes.
Yeah, when he got punched in the face at the beginning, for a moment I was like, oh no, I felt sad for him, like if a puppy got punched or something. But then he got back up and he's just kind of and I also knew his history, so it didn't really faze him. But it's just the way he presents himself.
And then he turned out he did that to rip off the little digital. You know,
right, like yeah.
Handheld, you know, the computer heads. Interface device.
So
Spoonheads.
Oh, yeah, brought back to Spoonheads.
Spoonheads. All right, so Terek-Nor, they've gone back to the Terek-Nor era in a number of episodes, and it's always looks so horrible. I mean, it's really amazing how different the station looks under Federation control versus the Cardassians. And and they got a ton of fucking extras for this show to just show how like cramped, like this episode just had all these people. Deep Space Nine was always good at having people milling about and doing stuff, but there's just like a shitload of people all crammed into these spaces and they look all fucking sad. And then the upper level, like the down level where the Bajorans are, and the Bajoran sector where they're all gated in, is all cramped and filled with a bunch of boxes and people and chemicals and shit. And then the upper level looks all nice and clean where the Cardassians are walking around. Just an interesting, you know, a lot of Cardassian architecture is about oppression, you know, and control. And this accentuates that.
Well, there was so I was thinking when you mentioned I was thinking about Baylar, the guy who originally came up and woke them up and was saying stop being such druggies out on the street or whatever.
That's the guy that doesn't like soup.
Yeah, I was just, because and so that was his,
I don't,
you
know, like, I think, soup.
I was, who the fuck doesn't like soup?
Yeah, gonna, I mean,
I
think he was,
I don't,
lying.
I don't really.
So
like, well, soup.
He was, well, just trying to act cool.
Well, so they,
it depends on the soup.
So
fair,
well,
point.
Yeah. So which leads me to. We were talking about like these methods of control that they have and stuff, and they have this soup kitchen thing, right, going on the street, which is pretty interesting that they would have a soup kitchen of all things.
They're feeding the Bajorans.
Yeah,
they're just not feeding.
You gotta
them
feed
all
the slaves,
well.
Right? Yeah. Exactly, and that's what I'm saying. It's sort of like it's sort of like they're giving them food, but
they're
protecting
them.
Right? It's a method of control, and the reason Baylar hates soup is because he reminds him of that.
Yeah,
and he doesn't want to have to be controlled by
point.
That.
If
shit
he was back on Bajor, he'd be eating
he'd
all
be
the soup he wants to eat, man.
Yeah, well, I mean, not anymore. He probably fucks him up, or maybe he's super like, I'm gonna make real soup. He's super. Maybe it's just going to be.
He's super souped out.
There's a restaurant.
I get what you're going for.
In DC called Supergirl, I think. And it's like.
Oh, we should
Supergirl.
Go there.
Yeah. I've never been there. Walk by it. Well, now we can't because we're under quarantine.
Fuck.
Yeah, everything's fucked up.
But yeah, another example, just generic example of Cardassian architecture being sort of the oppressive state, made into physical form is the commander's office, Cisco slash Ducat's office.
It's all up high
and elevated and you see the windows, they can look down on everybody.
Everything on that space station is just so harsh and,
even the way the doors open and close. It's amazing.
Because they had to redo the sleeping quarters so they could have comfy beds and shit, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think so.
And everything's
it was just a slab, like some hard bulkhead or something.
Yeah, everything's all dark and metallic and the doors are big gears that move around, you're going to get crushed by some industrial equipment.
And hot too, because we know the Cardassians heat, so we can infer that the ambient temperature would just be fucking misery.
Yeah, it was 30 degrees in there.
Garrick is always complaining about how cold the station is.
Mm. Garrick, at the beginning, he was making a good point about, they were just posturing or whatever and stuff. But also, Garrick is one of those characters. He's good at pointing out some logical stuff, but it is sort of influenced by his own sort of
He's also
kind of
a troll, too.
Yeah, he's trolling people. Yeah, exactly. He was fucking trolling them is what he was doing. And in doing that thing, it's like, well, what? I just wanted them to be more argumentative. It's like, well, you didn't have to go full force and talk about,
how the occupation was a good thing for Benjamin.
Yeah, right.
He's talking about it like in a historical perspective, and it hasn't been that long enough for it to be a historical perspective.
Yeah. Garrick's smart enough to know that when him getting all sort of like, oh, I was just trying to, he's smart enough to know that that would have ticked him off. So,
it's another example of one of the strengths of Deep Space Nine is that the tendency, the bias was towards the gray area. And what we're watching Garrick, we like Garrick.
Not like the grays, like the aliens. The aliens, the grays, Deep Space Nine, Star Trek.
Exactly. Not like the X-Files grays. Garrick, we know him very well. We like him, but we also understand we don't necessarily agree with a lot of his moral philosophy or what some of his geopolitical opinions might be. On the other hand, I agree that the point he was making, you can also imagine, knowing Bajorans as we do, good, wonderful people who have a very legitimate complaint and a much stronger argument than Garrick had on the topic of the occupation. But you can also see them potentially being less than magnanimous when it comes to hearing this stuff. Understandably, to be fair. But the point being, I think, is that the way the dialogue is it's playful, but it's also meant to point out, it's like, look, none of us are fucking perfect.
Yeah.
Garrick is being an asshole, but they might have been assholes too, even if they're in the right.
So both Garrick and Odo were saying some, racist shit about Bajorans. Garrick was basically Garrick was basically like they live to take orders and they want to be bossed around and Ducat was an asshole. He's like, they're my children or whatever. But the Odo, he looked down on Bajorans too. He was basically like, if you just fall in line, you've been fighting this for 50 years, what's the fuck's the point? Just fall in line. But that was probably that was objectifying. It wasn't like racism, like he hates them. It was objectifying them because they get in the way of what he wants. He's like, you'd make my job so much easier if you would just stop this pesky sort of uprising.
It's almost a utilitarian thing. And what's funny is I bet you even the Odo of that era, if you had asked him to abrogate his own thoughts and desires, he might bristle at the idea that he did, even though you're saying you didn't want to be in the lab anymore, so now you're working for the Cardassians, but you've deluded yourself into thinking that you are somehow a neutral party, and all you are doing is adjudicating basically the negotiation of the rules. But the rules were created by the Cardassians.
Yeah.
So you are working for the Cardassians no matter what you say. You abrogated it. And so when he's saying that, I mean, in the role of Thrax, of course, saying that, we have to remind ourselves that he's envisioned himself as Thrax in this hallucination or whatever. He's trying to defend his own. He is talking to himself, trying to defend the position of what he did, saying like, I did this because it's the smart thing to do. The Bajorans should have acquiesced and I acquiesced. But the modern Odo, of course, is like, no. But I think if you push the old Odo on it, you know, in not in a hallucination, it'd be interesting to see that. Although I guess technically we did kind of see that argument play out.
Yeah, I mean, it had that feeling like he wasn't talking to another person. It had that feeling like you were watching a movie or something with a scene where the dead person was talking to,
or like Golem.
Talking to them back in time and going and saying, you know, don't do that, blah, blah, blah. Can you hear me? That kind of weirdness.
It's a bit like a calmer version of the Golem.
Yeah, it wasn't
Golem
so...
Golem Smeagol.
Yeah, yeah.
Not as aggressive.
Right.
Or overt, but
yeah.
When you know the twist, that's effectively it's Odo talking to himself, arguing with himself.
Right.
Odo's a Law and Order guy and he likes the Law and Order, and so he's going to go for that regardless of whether that's Cardassian Law and Order or some other faction's Law and Order. But I think he's even said that in earlier instances where, like, you know, the Cardassians are making the rules, now the Federation's making the rules.
But in this...
Like, he's always for the rules.
Right, but in this instance, so one of the things he said is he was saying, I was just too busy, you know, almost like... He was admitting that he was too busy, but at the same time, it was almost like an excuse, because you could it's believable that he was too busy and he had a lot of shit to do and didn't want to do it, but sort of he wanted to maintain that, you know, sort of idea that he's at least working for a just... justice or whatever,
something,
you know what I'm saying?
Something happened and he didn't do what he should have done in that case, because now he didn't live up to his own ideas.
He loved justice so much and he loves the law so much that even if he's presented with a skewed version of it, and that's the problem with being too into the law or justice, is it's still created by the groups in power, and so they're creating this thing, and so in order they can do all sorts of things. So you love this idea of justice that it's neutral. So you'll sort of bend your mind to saying, okay, well, this is the right cause kind of deal.
Right.
It's like the example in real life where you have lawyers who are view themselves as good and moral people, but you'll get into situations where there'll be somebody who is wrongfully imprisoned, new evidence or something comes out. The prosecutors agree the person's innocent. The judges agree the person's innocent. The jail guards agree. Everyone agrees the person's innocent. But because of the way of the structure of the law, it's not like they get let out of fucking jail. There's like this whole long process. And sometimes that process gets held up. Like, for example, there are cases where you have to demonstrate some malfeasance on the prosecution's part to get let out of jail. And if the prosecution didn't do anything wrong, then even if everyone agrees you're innocent, then sometimes you have to stay in jail at least for a time until that gets sorted out. And that's insane. But that is this.
Because you'd be able to get out of that if there was some sort of procedural malfeasance.
Exactly. If the prosecutor hid evidence or something, then you can get out quicker than if it just turns out
they did everything by the book. Yeah. Then it's hard to,
It's a lot harder. And this is a real world example of what we see in both Cardassians, but also where Odo gets it from is from the founders, right? The founders we discover over as we learn more about them, that they have this obsession with order. And that's one reason why they decided to, create the empire, you know, because they decided to expand beyond their world because they wanted to protect themselves because people treated them like shit. But effectively they were saying, we need to organize everything for the purpose of making sure we're safe. And that means we don't give a shit what we do to other people as long as we can control them.
Yeah.
Because if you're all like some wiggly goo, like you gotta, you know, you don't know what's going to come after you. And like, you know, it's a more vulnerable state in a
Might drink you
in a universe of solids, and you're some wiggly goo.
Yeah, at the same time, they sort of live unified for a good portion. I mean, separate but unified. They're all joined together. They still have their independence, but they're unified in some way that is, you know, indescribable to humanity or whatever. But that's sort of that's a form of order. That's a form of, you know, taking many and unifying it into one. You know, and so maybe that they kind of have a tendency to sort of want everything to sort of control as one unit.
Are you saying they're communists? Are they communists?
I don't think that's what it is.
Yeah. I don't know. I never thought about it that way. Do they have communists in space?
Communists in space? Yeah, it's called the Federation.
Oh, yeah. Oh, shit.
All right, so
photon torpedoes fired.
We haven't talked yet. We haven't talked yet about, you know, one of the premier villains. In my opinion, the premier villain in Star Trek. There was a Twitter poll about this. I think TrekCore or somebody had one earlier today about who was the best. It's like a, you know, like an NBA bracket, except it's all the Star Trek villains. And I, along with a lot of other people, were putting Gul Dukat, because Gul Dukat has such a brilliant arc over the course of the series. And he has a big advantage over a lot of the other villains because he's right there from the beginning through to the end. And he keeps popping up in these kind of little side stories where he serves a function in the story. And we learn little bits and pieces about him, even if the story is not directly related to him. But, you know, when he selects Dax to be his little Bajoran girl toy, right?
Whose name was Lita.
Yeah, she picked that name randomly because she knew Lita, the bartender girl, the Dabo girl.
Yeah.
Who worked at Quark's.
And so. She's Bajoran.
Mm-hmm. So she needed a Bajoran name, so she just pulled her friend's name out of her
butt. Is that the one that's Jake's girlfriend?
No, she's Rom's girlfriend.
Oh, Rom. Word.
An eventual wife. But what that scene was like really intense when she's there and she's very nervous. And he just says, Kanar. And she's just expected to understand that she's supposed to go get some. Mm. And that, you know, really with very few words defining the relationship between both Cardassians and Bajorans generally, but specifically between Dukat and his quote unquote Bajoran children. They're meant to do as he tells them, you know?
Well, yeah, that's what he was saying before he got double axe handled, as he was talking about, you know, they're my children and I'm care for them. And, you know, I have such a, you know, I'm so giving and stuff. And I mean, it's kind of hard to believe that he would believe that. But I mean, you're led to believe that he's so delusional that he would
believe
that.
It's his arrogance.
But that seems so excessively arrogant.
But does it. They have him do that repeatedly. He repeatedly makes these errors based off of arrogance. And he's not, as Sisko points out, during that scene where he comes in while they're eating soup, he's not a dumb guy. He's a maniac in a lot of ways, but he's not a dumb guy. He's complex. You know, he talks about he's talking to Dax and says, like, you'll find I'm a very complex, you know, it's like, yeah, okay. That doesn't mean you're like worth talking to. you know, yes, you are a complex and nuanced person.
Anyone who says
you're a Cardassian.
If you start off with saying you're complex and nuanced, it doesn't mean you're not, but it's kind of like a check against, you know, it's a check. It's sort of indication that you probably aren't complicated, but you might be, or at least just a dick. I guess, I mean, how complex is he? He's not really. Garak is complex. Dukat is.
I think Dukat is complex.
He is.
I think he's complex because.
I think all the Cardassians are complex.
Because, yeah, the Cardassians are an interesting race of people because they do have a strong culture. They have literature. They have.
It's not like they're all bad.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, most of them.
I mean, just like any Star Trek species
as
race.
As we learn that the Romulans.
They're not all bad.
All Romulans are bad.
They just have their own perspective.
It's almost contextual. You can see where the character traits we see in Cardassians at the time of Deep Space Nine, you know, 24th century, we can see that those are problematic when interacting with Federation style or kind of our Western ideas of what makes a good person. But you can also see how those did make them strong in their way, in whatever situations they were facing, that they were successful up to a point. Of course, later in the show, we see how those same things start to fail them and start to cause them trouble, because instead of being part of a big team, they're kind of out on their own. And then when they do have to team up with people like the Romulans and the Founders and stuff, it's just, you know, they're so suspicious. You know, it's a problematic thing. It's kind of like the Italians and the Germans in World War II, you know, where you're kind of like in the Japanese, they're all like, they're teaming up, but they're kind of, because they've all got their own weird things going on.
Yeah, so how do Romulans then? I guess Romulans are a little bit more cohesive, right?
That's going to be our next T-shirt.
How do Romulans then?
...
Yeah, they're more cohesive than the Cardassians. Cardassians don't really have any religion or anything like that, and neither does the Romulans have that weird quasi kind of.
Yeah, they got like a spirituality more so than the Cardassians. But you know, the Cardassians, to be fair, like is the standard thing with Star Trek aliens, they are in fact really very human, right? They're representing human aspects.
It's a certain human set of things.
And like there's that whole scene between, you know, when Odo, Sisko, and Garak are captured and put in the brig, and Thrax comes and is talking to them. clearly the writers were meaning to evoke being railroaded. You know, Odo's all saying like, look at this pattern of bombings. Just look at the evidence. You have to do an investigation. And Thrax is all saying like, no, you know, it's all good. Everything fits. It's fine. They're the writers of the episode are evoking things like Jim Crow, right? Mm-hmm. They're evoking Japanese internment camps. They're evoking, especially the communists, you know, these kind of sham trials, accusations that are good enough to be put people away for propaganda purposes, for example purposes. But they're also weirdly, Deep Space Nine did this a lot by accident, prefiguring post-9/11 America in a lot of ways, where it's like all of a sudden it's like you just accuse somebody of being a terrorist or something, and right. Or you say there's terrorists, and then all of a sudden you can lock down the whole fucking station and treat all these other people poorly who had nothing to do with it, right? And this whole concept of Dukat blaming the resistance for his cruelty, it's like I wouldn't have to be so cruel right. If it weren't for you guys right. Trying to get me to stop being so cruel. You know, it's a ridiculous argument, but it's an argument that has been used repeatedly, including today, in very unfortunate ways.
So apparently the actor Mark Alimo, he was actually he was a Gul Masset in Next Generation.
I think the first Cardassian he played.
Yeah, and I'm not sure, I'm not finding where he's first, Dukat was first introduced.
Was on Deep Space Nine, I think, was the first time.
Yeah, but I'm wondering what episode. I'm sure it's not that hard.
Oh, just the first.
It's Emissary, yeah.
He's in the first.
Oh, yeah, one. You're right. That, duh. I fucking talked about that. Like the scene between him and Sisko.
Because Sisko takes his office.
Yeah. Yeah, and they talk about it, and Dukat's all like, oh, we're here if you need help. He's like, oh, okay, yeah, fuck you. Sure.
Yeah, they're all like dancing around each other.
Yeah, okay. That was a fucking a brain glurps. Gizmodo rated The Wounded the 80th greatest episode of Star Trek.
Yeah, that's the episode that he's in, TNG, The Wounded.
Yeah,
that's a good episode, actually. So
if you die in the Matrix, you die in real life.
Yeah, and you know, it's funny because they set that up, but there was never really that much drama. And like, of course, it's, you know, we don't expect these people to actually.
They're trying to give us some die. Kind of stakes, I guess.
They're giving you some minor stakes, which is good.
A bit of a bloody nose.
I think it was helpful to be like, all right, here's a little bit of stakes. But again, they didn't like go in. Like, we did not keep going back to the station and having like Worf and Bashir looking all super worried over their minds. Right, yeah. We barely see them. There's a little bit at the beginning, a little bit at the end for the most part. It's not like in you could see some other Star Trek episodes where it'd be kind of like a constant back and forth. Like they're all trying, you know, kind of like a little bit like the Inner Light, but Inner Light was similar to the, you know, where they're not going back and forth too much between what's going on to the person who's.
There's not a lot of like
being raptured.
Current day Deep Space Nine. There's no O'Brien. That's just, you know.
It's a pretty tight many people you see in this episode. It's a pretty
and
tight.
You don't see Major Kira till the end, and I don't know if this is true or not, but it looks like from all the TV clues, it looks like the actress was possibly pregnant.
Oh, yeah.
Based on the outfit she was wearing and the angle that they did all the shots from, and the fact that she wasn't in the episode until the very end.
Well, and then as you progress and see more of Deep Space Nine, you'll see how they work. She did, Kira Nerys, she was actually, Nana Visitor was pregnant with Siddig El-Fidel, or Alexander Siddig's baby.
Oh, word?
Bashir's baby, because they were like together for a while. They worked the pregnancy into the show in a very kind of a clever sci-fi fashion, which was pretty cool. But speaking of kids,
right,
so Gul Dukat, again, this is what makes him complex and interesting, is when Dax says, you still want to take care of your quote unquote children, even though they just tried to blow you up. And he says, bad manners are the fault of the parent, not the child. And I thought that's got to be like some sort of old aphorism. But when I search Google, it's all this episode. That's where this comes up. And I was like, that's a pretty good one.
Isn't that great when you search Google for something based on what you're viewing or reading? And then it's an example of what you're viewing or reading.
That's it.
The only other I'm reminded of the film Gladiator. It was he was talking to Joaquin Phoenix. He was all like, your failings as a son. Or my failings as a father.
Yeah.
And that's when Joaquin Phoenix freaks out and kills him. So that's kind of like that, right? Somewhat?
Yeah, it is.
Sure.
It's just a very like similar concept.
Very similar. I found something that's common. That's not common, but in common.
Commodious. But what's funny about that line is that line is both, on the one hand, it sounds really nice. It sounds like, oh, he's taking responsibility. But then on the other hand... His logic is, so I have to punish them harder.
Yeah.
Because you know, they're my children. They're not your children, you asshole. They're like a separate people from you, you piece, piece of shit. You're just like a slave master.
Yeah. I was bummed out when Thrax was telling... was telling those people in that jail cell, he's like, okay, you get paid, you get out. And then the other people was like, okay, well, you get this many hours of hard labor. But those last people, he's
your
like,
your fine has been paid.
And yeah, the last people, he was like, you're going on the planet for interrogation.
Yeah, I know. I was like, oh, shit. Fuck,
the people were all like, oh.
Yeah, that's fucked
up. You don't
up.
Want to get interrogated by the Cardassians.
That's just the Cardassian way is that's their deal, right? Are they a military structure where their whole deal is if they kill you something good happens? Is that's you know Klingons, they kill their captain and
not so much
not like that, but there's something really
they like to break you. The Cardassians like to break you.
Yeah, they like to break you.
I think it's useful to point out that if you've watched all of Deep Space Nine, you know, you do, of course, the Cardassians are one of the Cardassians and Bajorans, along a little bit with the Klingons and Romulans, but Cardassians and Bajorans are mainly the groups you learn the most about in terms of the culture and all that. And going back to Gul Dukat, how he's different than a lot of Cardassians is we see other Cardassians who are cruel. We see other Cardassians who are in charge of Bajorans, but they're much more kind of matter of fact about it. They're like, yeah, this is fucked up, but this is the deal, or fuck them, they're rat people, or whatever. Gul Dukat really does seem to live in this delusion that it's some sort of narcissistic thing that he is somehow taking care of them. It goes all the way straight through to the very end of the fucking season 7. I mean, a lot of his motivations in the 7th season for what ends up happening with him and the machinations he propels forward are almost him being pissed off at the Bajorans for not like agreeing, but like basically Kira representing Bajorans not like agreeing that the occupation was good for Bajor. He makes over the course of the series a similar argument to what it's inferred is Garrick's argument that, yeah, maybe the occupation was cruel and a lot of people died, but in the end, the Bajorans are now in a better position as a result because now they're stronger and blah, 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 blah. Now, that's, of course, an insane sort of bullshit argument, but it is, again, an argument that comes up in the real world. People have used that with slavery, for example, to suggest that, like, oh, well, black people are in America are way better off than black people in the Congo, so it was 350 years of slavery and another 150 years of Jim Crow was totally worth it. It's not. That's a dumb argument, but it is an argument that carries logic with a certain personality. And Gul Dukat is somebody who seems to really believe in that, whereas I think a lot of other Cardassians are like, nah, that's a bullshit argument. We were just stronger and raped their planet, and when we were done raping their planet, we got the fuck out of there.
Yeah, I think, yeah, because most of the Cardassians, all that cruel shit is just kind of business as usual, you know?
It's utilitarian.
Yeah, and Gul Dukat, he thinks he's above it, and he thinks he's doing it righteously, right? But yeah, that's the ironic part, is he's still going through the sort of lens of a Cardassian sort of approach to it. So he's not rejecting all that to be good. He just kind of puts it into overdrive.
He's the kind of guy who buys into the propaganda, you know? Mm. Like, they have all the propaganda, and most people are like, ha, isn't this great propaganda? And he's like, yes, we are gods. We are the most amazing people. Whereas I think probably your average Cardassian, you know, camp commander was just like, yeah, we're doing this to get fucking resources.
Like, because you see Garrick all being like, yeah, Gul Dukat, he's all like, he's just arrogant.
Yeah.
You know, whatever. He's all self-absorbed.
I mean, you know. Would you call him a company man? Because, you know, he does rise to the top. And when I think of people believing in propaganda, I think sort of people being led around. That's the usual imagery, right? It's like, oh, sheep with the propaganda. That's the imagery that's always evoked.
Yeah.
But he is not really like that. He's a leader.
Look at Hitler.
Look at Hitler.
No, you fucking look at Hitler. God
look,
damn it.
Look at
I
him.
Wanna, I want you to look at him.
Look at him.
Dan?
Look at him.
Dan?
I don't
look at Hitler.
Look at him.
All right.
Stop.
Hitler, you could argue, is an example of somebody who believed in the bullshit, as opposed to other leaders who maybe know it's bullshit but are using it to gin up things. It's kind of like, okay, so we were talking before the podcast,
yeah, I mean,
like Stalin kicking all the Jewish doctors out of the country because he was like, oh, Jewish people are bad. And then like he got fucked over because he needed smart doctors, and like the doctors he had left sucked.
I'm not going to begin myself. I'm not saying you don't. I'm saying I don't, because I'm pretty like ignorant about it myself. I don't know as much about it, but I don't want to start to like figure out the motivations of things like that. But I think of, you know, certain, you know, like for example, certain political radio hosts, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And they spew a bunch of shit. And they spew the propaganda, but they don't actually believe in it. They
just that's what attention. I'm saying. Yeah. That's what I'm saying is the and difference. So I think Gul Dukat actually believes in it, whereas somebody right. else wouldn't.
I'm saying that's interesting that he would believe in it, but he's also not a follower. You know, he's
kind of, no, absolutely. You're right. I think it's a good point. You know, you're making a good point, which is that's actually probably the most dangerous person is the person who has both the charisma and skills to obtain leadership, but also kind of buys into, and it's probably a process, right? They might not start out believing the shit, but as their plans keep being successful and they keep rising through the ranks, they actually start believing. It's a narcissistic. Gul Dukat has narcissistic personality.
You believe
disorder.
You can do anything or say anything. Yeah. Everyone will believe you.
And each success only accentuates that, and each defeat quickly becomes not a defeat, not a personal failing, but a result of his scheming enemies, his betrayed somebody allies, else's, yeah. it's somebody else's somebody fault. Else's right. All his successes are his. Fault. All his faults are somebody else's. Right. It's narcissistic personality.
Who does that remind us of?
Somebody. I don't know. There's somebody out there who sounds very similar to that, and who has also stumbled his way into leadership and fucked everything up.
Although
I'm totally lost right now.
Although the unexplained analogy that we're describing just falls apart because Gul Dukat actually is a fairly competent person in a lot of ways, which causes some of his problems. He makes mistakes due to arrogance, but a lot of his actual like plans and schemes are bad, but they're good. Like they work. He undermines himself because he, you know, looks out the fucking window talking about his children while this Bajoran slave girl bashes him in the back of the head.
Yeah, he's total predator, man. So they did some double axe handle bashing a few times. They did a lot.
Yeah.
They introduced it with Dax in that one part. And then when they were running to the, after Dax slyly blew up the prison wall, it was awesome. She popped her head. Yeah, like, hey guys. Yeah. That's pretty awesome. And they like went off and went to the runabout, and then they got attacked by some more Cardassians. And I think it was Sisko. Yeah. Sisko started axe handling him, like double fisting him, over and over and over again. At that point, I never saw it like that in that succession. Usually they're coming up behind their back and hitting them in the back of the head, but he was doing it instead of a regular punch. He just did it like three or four times.
Yeah.
I think Odo might have thrown one in there too. You know, they were really going for that one, which is, I think I remember reading some article about the guy who originally did stunt coordination and who was sort of the first one to like put that in there. And I think they didn't say he was incompetent. They were just saying
he was insane.
He was a weird guy. Yeah. So but that stuck. And now it's kind of lovable that they do that now, you know, even though it's totally ridiculous.
It is ridiculous, but I like it.
But it's that awesome. I like it's that fun sort of Star Trek battle that doesn't feel violent, even though it is violent. It does, and of course it is violent, and it feels violent, but it doesn't feel sad. It doesn't feel, it still feels sort of like you're at a carnival or something. Oh, Garrick showed his awesome phaser skills when he shot dude behind Odo, one of the soldiers.
Yeah.
So another time, Garrick is just like, wow, Garrick seems like this sort of, you know, we know he's up to some shit. He looks like this totally sort of innocent kind of, not innocent, but this not too effectual kind of guy. But then you realize he's some kind of super ninja. So.
I like how every episode where Garrick gets like, you know, active basically, and his hair gets all kind of like tousled.
He's
like
activated.
He's flopping around. Activated. His eyes are all big, and his hair is all kind of like flopping around.
It's like a fighting game or something.
So when, you know, they get captured again, this time Dax gets captured as well. They're all thrown in the jail cell, right? Back in the jail cell. And this is where Sisko really begins interrogating Odo, like proper. Like before he was asking him interrogative questions, but now it's straight up like, all right, dude, what the fuck is going on? Particularly after, you know, they do the whole escape thing and then they just appear back in the jail cell.
Yeah,
and
that was like, funny. I was like, God damn it.
He's like, all right. Sisko's like, all right, we're in Odo's fucking mental maze.
Yeah.
I don't know why, but clearly Odo, something's going on here with fucking Odo, and he's pretty rough with Odo, which is not in a bad, but like in a really sort of a militaristic leadership kind of way. He's kind of digging at him.
Like,
he's
got to tell me what's happening,
and he's giving him respect. He's not being like, you piece of shit. But what's interesting is as we mentioned before, Bashir is doing all that like, I don't know what it is. I don't know. We're going to try to figure it out, but I don't know. Here, Odo keeps saying, I don't know, I don't know, I don't know. Except he does know.
He does.
He does know.
He does know. He just doesn't want to admit it to them or to himself.
He knows.
Yeah.
Yeah, the that whole sort of walk to the runabout and then, or escape pod or whatever, and then sort of zap back into the prison cell, that combined with sort of the description at the end, it was so weird that they already had a theory going about what was happening. It wasn't strong. It wasn't like focused on the episode, but they did mention it. And at the end, they turned it into like, oh, I guess you still got a little, you know, smooshiness inside of you.
Yeah, a little smooshies.
And smooshy. And there was some kind of mental link that went on, blah, blah. It's really far-fetched, right? Yeah. Which is fine. I'm not necessarily complaining, but then the idea of, okay, they're in a mind hypno mind state and they warp back from the runabout to the jail cell. Of course, anything's possible in your mind, but those seem like such, on the one hand, they seem like really convenient plot devices, but on the other hand, it, like, for example, the warping from the runabout back to the prison, it did kind of move the plot forward for that reason, because like you said, Cisco is going, you know, okay, what the fuck's happening here?
Yeah.
You know, so it's kind of hard, because on the one hand, it seems jarring. It's like they just warp back. But then on the other hand, it could be along the same lines of at the beginning when they were all talking and fine, and then suddenly they're out. It's just move this along and get this, because that's not the important thing.
In that case, also, if you take the premise that what's happening is Odo's mind is feeling this crippling guilt and has to let it out.
Yeah.
It's not going to let him succeed in literally running away from his problem, which is he wants to get off this station, wherever it is, whatever manifestation it is. He wants to get the fuck away from that promenade where those motherfuckers get executed right in front of his cold fucking eyes. Although he does look pretty sexy in that Cardassian Odo suit, which is pretty fucking tight.
He does. Oh yeah, at the end he does look pretty hot. There's got to be a term for this, although there probably isn't. But like some sort of Truman Show situation where you have this sort of space you live in and you can't get out of that space, and you think, well, just walk out of this space. They never thought of that. Or when they finally do, the system gets desperate and throws some ridiculous shit at you, like in the Truman Show. Every time it goes out, you have a crazy storm. Isn't that? That's kind of sketchy. Yeah. And this is kind of like that situation too. It's like, I can't think of any way else to keep people in here. Fuck it, we're just gonna warp them back. Eventually, like, people search out. And it's the moment that sort of helps them more realize what's going on.
And I don't think they needed it, but if this were done in the modern era where they weren't tied to 43 minutes, I bet you they would have had it happen like two more times in succession.
Right.
And where they just keep zapping back. And then they'd be like, okay,
yeah,
some shit's going on here. Yeah. Odo, can you tell us what the deal is? And plus, I mean, it's not like they just randomly pick Odo. Odo's been acting like a lunatic this whole time.
Yeah.
Acting weird, talking about, complaining about smells, almost dropping trays, you know, fucking dropping his spoon in his soup, you know, looking at his hands like a lunatic. Mm. Clearly something's happening to him that's different than the others. And the others have observed this because they're not dumb. You know, they can pay attention. They're just normal human.
They're Starfleet officers.
They're Starfleet officers. Yeah, I said human again because I'm a fucking racist piece of shit. I apologize. I'm working on it.
Because one of them's a Trill.
One of them, and one of them was a Cardassian. One of them
was a Cardass.
Yeah, and he all asked Thrax, he's like, hey, can I talk to you in this
fucking room? One of them's a changeling.
Can I talk to you for a minute in the side room here? And they're like, okay. And then he just like opened the door. Some person on death row, they kind of let this person on death row out so they can have a little chat in the corner. But obviously, Odo's brain. So if it lets him sort of get that closure, it's interesting, how when it gets to a certain point, sort of. Some things allow themselves sort of to happen.
And very important. You know, we touched base a little bit on the end with Kira, which was this great scene. But even before that, you know, when Odo finally admits to what happened, right? Mm-hmm. He goes through the process, which I thought was really well done in how they filmed it and framed it. You know, it starts with Thrax saying, you know, what are you going to do about it, Odo? And then it goes to the scene where they're going to shoot Cisco and Dax, and now Dax and Garrick. And then Odo says, no, I won't let you. And he's standing there. And first thing, it's clearly done very dreamlike. At this point, they're just abandoning all pretense, right? It's just, this is dream logic now. And one way they indicate that is that the windows just have this blinding white light coming through.
Oh, I didn't notice that.
Which is, normally, it's the blackness of space.
Right.
Or maybe the wormhole, but it's really jarring in a subtle way because as you, like you said, Dan, you don't notice this unless you're kind of like looking around the edges because you've seen the episode a couple times, and all of a sudden you see Odo standing there with this halo of white light from the window, and then your brain is like, my brain was suddenly like, wait a second, why is it just bright white light coming through the fucking,
I didn't notice
it looked like daylight almost. And I thought that was really cool. But I think very important, and again, very DS9, very anti, the opposite of TNG, the opposite of Voyager for the most part, is he doesn't get let off the hook at the end. When he's telling this tale to Garak, Sisko, and Dax, they're looking at him like, Jesus Christ, right. You fucking dick. I mean, they're not being assholes about it, but they're not like giving him, they're not being all like, oh, it's okay, man. You know, shit is wild. You know, people grow, you know, people make mistakes. It's all okay. They're looking at him like, Jesus, that's fucked up. No wonder you kept that quiet. And then of course that's expanded upon in the scene with Kira, and that, you know, the ending lines are, you know, she basically says like, I need to know, like, I've thought about this for days and I'm freaking out, but I don't know if I can work it out or not, but can you at least tell me, like, I need to know that no other innocent people died on your watch. And he's just like, I'm not sure. I hope not. And that's the right fucking answer, because he doesn't know. Yeah, like, no. Bashir doesn't know. Now he really doesn't know. And he feels guilty. And it brings together the whole story, because even though it's focused on these three people who he knows were innocent, and he feels bad because effectively his laziness, for lack of a better term, is what led to their deaths. So he's responsible for their deaths, and he is. He also feels guilty about all those other times before this incident. I think we're led to believe that this incident is what led him to change his philosophy and become more like the Odo we know and love today. But the implication is like, he's been on that station for a while in that role, and quite likely he did similar things before that he just didn't get the evidence for. He wasn't so lucky to have that evidence pop up where he kind of was forced to reexamine.
This can't be the only incident like this. Yeah.
And even at the end of the episode, around that the execution scene, he was expecting, I think, I don't know if it was sort of implied that he was kind of going up to be executed too, and they even pull him back and say, no, there's only three of them. So it's just another way to rub it in his face. It's like, you get to go free, you know? And you get to watch this.
Yeah, no, that's a good point, actually. You are guilty. Yeah. They were not. You have not been punished.
Yeah, right. And then they all warp away to the other side. And it was a nice touch to actually see from finally them getting actually executed. I think that's pretty powerful because it made it was just like, these
and
are
him just sort
dying.
Of coldly looking down.
Yeah, that was a good, really good way to sort of end that part. The end of the episode, it was good. It kind of, but on another side of it, it kind of reminded me, and this is not bad, this is good. It reminded me of that animated series episode that we reviewed. So
lonely.
It just ends on like a, whoa, man, that sucks. You know,
yeah.
For totally different reasons, but it just ends on a total downer.
And a lot of Deep Space Nine episodes end like that.
Yeah. And like you said, the theme is kind of like people saying, I don't know, I don't know, I don't know. And that sort of adds sort of, like, to almost like it, there's closure, but there isn't closure, you know, but there's closure in the sense that it's an episode. In the episodic sense, it's like, that's closure, but it's unexpected because they don't tie up all the loose ends. They end it with, I don't know what's going to happen.
Yeah.
And that was a perfect way to end it.
And a realistic way to end it.
Yeah. But it wasn't like there wasn't like your uplifting sort of kind of ending. And so it kind of left you like waiting for the good part, like the happy part to happen, but you knew it wasn't coming. So.
And the other thing also is, you know, if we transpose Data into a similar situation, for example, Data, his core thing is that he'd like to be more human. So him, every time Data has his superiority or perceived superiority knocked down a few pegs, he delights in it almost. He likes it. He likes to know that he's flawed. He likes to know. Now he gets upset if he gets a calculation wrong or something concerns him, but he
humor always escapes. Humor always escapes him.
What?
I was going to say humor always...
Escapes?
I was saying escapes, but I started saying escapes, and so I reiterated it and emphasized it so people could know that I know it's escape, but I really just derailed what we were talking about.
Yeah.
What I was saying is humor. I was thinking, you know, the scene in Generations. Humor. Take away the plank, and then he just pushes her off the bridge or off the boat. The boat.
The boat. The
and
ship.
So,
it's a ship, I believe.
He's like, yeah, the boat ship. And so it's a whole, you know, Data doesn't get humor. That's his biggest frustration.
But the point being is that Data is somebody who, if Data finds and believes himself to have a flaw, there's the potential that in the story he ends up liking that. Odo's the opposite. Odo has this artifice that he's created. And similar to Dukat in some ways.
He's got a lot of armor.
Odo's not a narcissist, but similar to Dukat, he likes that role. He likes to have that visage.
Well, like,
you know?
Jesse said, it is his armor because he has to embrace it because he spent so much time having to deal with like people being shitty.
And to break that down, is scary for him. And so by the end of this episode, he does not see it as a positive. I bet you later on, he looking back as he grows even further from this episode where he does start to let people in more, you know, and he gets closer to Kira and other characters, you know, he opens up more, becomes a more open and sometimes even joyful person, right? But he's not there yet. Not at the end of this episode. At the end of this episode, it's still like, fuck, I'm sitting in my office. I've still got my job. But now things are changed a little bit for me because I can't rely on this anymore because the people who matter know the truth.
So when O'Brien got his brain implanted with prison memories.
Hard time.
Now
it's one of the most fucked up episodes of Star Trek ever.
Right.
It's fantastic.
It is really good. And so I don't know if this is considered a spoiler. I haven't seen it in a while, but we're sort of left not knowing if he would have committed those crimes, those crimes because of the implant, or if that's really how he would have reacted.
Exactly. Good point.
So the advantage of the people on the outside saying, no, it's okay. It's okay. You're okay. You're not an asshole. This is just some shit they fucked with you. They're able to sort of grasp onto that idea. They're going to grasp onto that idea because they don't want to think about O'Brien as a shitty person. He is, as himself, having guilt. He's going to focus entirely on that aspect. Odo, on the other hand, ended up with them people being like, what the fuck?
Yeah, he doesn't have that.
There was really no sort of like anything like, he can come grasp to. Like,
fuck, man, you are not the person you thought we were.
Yeah, because growing up lonely and bullied is never really an acceptable reason to pull some shit like that.
It's a reason, not an excuse.
Yeah, okay, no, that's... You know? I like that. I've said that before. It's like, it's no excuse, man. That's what happened. I'm a piece of shit.
We understand where you're coming from, but, you know, come on. You know.
Come on.
Come on, guy.
Come on.
You could have done better.
Come on.
All right. Well, before we close things out, I know Gan probably has all sorts of games and gags and stuff.
I don't really have any games this week. I fucked up. I thought about it, but
Have any gags?
I have some gas.
But I just wanted to say we just need to spend a little bit of time. We touched on Thrax a little bit. Again, Kurtwood Smith's character didn't play as big a role as he did in Voyager's Year of Hell, but he was a very key role.
But
here.
It was excellent.
And again, touching on the fact that he did such a good job of subtly inhabiting the role of Odo while playing a completely different person, but still, you know.
Because he does the whole, like, messing with Quark thing.
Yeah.
He goes to Quark
and
he's like, hey, Quark, you were doing this and this and this with this guy? And it's like, yeah, that guy.
Well, there's even a point where he's, like, holding on to the console.
It's classic.
He's, like, talking to Odo and he's, like, holding on to the console in the same way that Odo has frequently, like, kind of leans over and holds onto the console. And these are things you don't note. They're so subtle, you don't notice, but they're so important to the performance because the role would have fallen apart if he was too different than Odo. But at the same time, it's a sort of a razor's edge because he couldn't be 100% like Odo because, again, not that they were hiding the twist from us. They're better writers than that. But it would have maybe given it away a little bit too early in that sense. So I was really impressed with his performance.
Yeah, when I was watching him, basically, I think the first time they were sort of interacting and then also the Quark thing. Yeah, you get the...
Quark!
The feeling, like you were just saying...
Grand Negazek.
You have... You look
Wallace Shawn.
Yeah.
You
we should do some of those.
Hell yeah. I like Ferengi episodes.
All I was gonna say is that you watch him and you it's like derailed my brain.
no, mind maze. We're all gonna get trapped in Dan's mind maze.
So anyway, it got to a point where I was just basically like not actively thinking too hard about him sounding like Odo, but it occurred to me that he was, you know, sort of okay. So the best closest thing I can relate it to is one time I went to, there was this Halloween movie festival over the weekend, spooky movie music festival or spooky movie festival, whatever.
You're looking at both of us like this.
Was that that Bobo Golem guy?
Yes, it was, right. Word. And so they were playing it was not Nosferatu. It was the Quasimodo one. What was the Quasimodo one?
Hunchback of Notre Dame.
Yeah, and so they were playing that, but they Bobo Golem did the soundtrack for it.
Oh shit!
So he was at front doing it, and at first I'm watching him, I can't take my eyes off him. But then eventually, which is like the magical part happens, is you eventually sort of fade away and stop noticing that he's there, and that's what you want to go for, something, a performance that stick it's believable but doesn't stick out too much, and it doesn't take control of the scene too much. And I thought that Kurtwood Smith,
it's a very skilled
he did a fantastic
I love when Sisko is like, there's something strange about him, he doesn't act like your typical Cardassian. It's like
I feel like there was an episode when Quark was such a dick to those people, but
oh yeah, I forgot to say, he was so fucking condescending. It was like hilariously condescending. It's like, walk through this gate.
Through the door that the nice man has opened up for you.
Do you need me to hold your hand?
You guys must be in the engineering.
Yeah, he was like, you guys must be warp scientists.
Yeah, he does. Very good. You three must be warp engineers. Now we're going to walk down to the promenade to the bar. Would you like me to hold your hands, or can you manage it? And Sisko goes, we'll manage. And he's like, I'm so glad. It was brilliant.
And then they're like talking about like, what if, like, can we do an experiment with the timeline? If something happens with Quark. Yeah. It's like, yeah, let's do that.
Yeah, I thought it'd be funny if when they woke up, they just got up and they walked down to Quark's and just started beating the fuck out of him.
Like, fucking Quark. I feel like there was an episode, and I couldn't find it immediately, but where he was actually accused of being a nice guy with some refugees or something. I could be totally making that up, but one of the crew was like, "Quark, do you actually have a heart in there?" He's like, "Don't tell anybody."
Yeah, no, that happens.
I feel like that happens. That happens.
That's like the deal with Quark.
It happens a fair amount where he ends up, you know, it's he goes right up to the edge, but then he ends up doing the semi right thing. Granted, he'll still try to profit out of it somewhat if he can,
but in a good way.
Yeah.
Yeah. So the episode where Odo turns back into a gooey guy again was The Begotten. That's four episodes later.
Yeah. It's coming up soon.
Yeah. It's where he's coming up soon.
What?
We're coming up soon? That what is in like 4 weeks from now?
No, I'm sorry. You're right.
Coming out.
I was on the 1996 timeline. My brain transferred back into the past when I was 16 years old and watching this show and being desperately entertained.
And I was 18.
And that's when he had a little kind of a little changeling thing that was all nice to him. And stuff.
It's another really good episode. Yeah, really good stuff. All right. So anything else? No, so you don't have any games for us, Dan, so...
I thought about maybe
you don't have to
games.
Have a game every... I don't know what, you know...
It wasn't like a thing I was trying to thing. It just happened like 2 weeks in a row there were themes going on that I wanted to pull out. This one, at first I was thinking, what are all the reasons they're going to give for why this is a, you know, what it is that brought them into this sort of scenario? You know, what kind of techno babble will they give? And I started collecting notes and I was like, that's not really... It wasn't too ridiculous. It wasn't... Didn't stand out. Like, I don't mean that in a bad way. I mean, it was just kind of like, it wasn't off the chain. It was just kind of like there so they could, you know.
I think this is, again, we've cited a couple times before in previous episodes, a little bit in Thine Own Self with Data when he lost his memory, where again, it was like, all right, he got, you know, they gave a reason, but like really the reason was, is the story. This is how the story works.
Yeah. Right.
Data discovering his core self by losing his memory and then kind of rebuilding it, you know, not rebuilding the memory, but you know,
and there's no reason to waste too much time on sort of tropes that can be assumed. And that's the thing.
I think, and it's an important lesson, not just for Star Trek writing, but I think for writing in general is, yeah, of course it depends on what kind of vibe you're going for. And there's totally space for the world building, you know, super detailed vibe.
But the theme was different.
I'm into that. But Star Trek, it's not that it hasn't done it. It has done it a lot, but it often annoys people overtly or subconsciously when Star Trek spends a little bit too much time on the plot mechanics and trying to make them make sense or come up with magic words to make them make sense in some long detailed explanation, when really Star Trek is a fictional television program.
No.
Whose goal it
is. What? You said two words that don't make sense.
To
tell entertaining stories with characters we like, or are interested in. And, you know, they often have a sort of a moral or whatever tale to it. But the idea is, if you constrain yourself too much, which I think did happen sometimes on Voyager, I think it's happened in all the series here and there. I think some leaned into it too much. If you constrain yourself too much, it constrains the dramatic opportunities. It constrains the relationships you have with the people. Because again, I'm a big fan of Voyager as a show, but one knock on Voyager is that they had a lot of what do you call it? The characterizations were inconsistent sometimes because they wanted to tell a story. So they would tell a story. They would adjust the characterizations of the people to fit the story.
No rules.
Yeah. No. Yeah, exactly. And that the problem is part of that is a function of like, you're so desperate to tell this one particular story as opposed to looking at the characters and then coming up with some gimmick that lets you tell the story you want to tell, but that stays true to the characters because that's what makes the story interesting. This story is interesting because everything that happened, we totally change our opinion of the character of Odo in this episode, and he did not change one bit.
And that's the kind of, and to reiterate what I was saying before, and what you're saying too, is that this is the kind of thing that's satisfying that was not satisfying to me about Year in Hell. Although I'm not, Year in Hell was like one of the best Voyager episodes.
Yeah, it's a great episode.
That, and you know, so I'm not going to knock it too hard for that, but this felt more satisfying because it. And I feel you can do that kind of stuff without even being completely serialized, you know?
I agree as well.
Yeah. So, yeah. And so that's, you can do little character shifts here and there that maybe don't maintain some greater, you know, story like the fucking, what was their fucking name in DS9? The war they had with the, it wasn't the Maquis.
The Dominion?
The Dominion. Yeah. I knew it was a word about words.
Yeah, the Founders.
Yeah. So that whole,
Jem'Hadar.
And that was great too, but you don't have to have that in order to have episodes like this one where Odo, you know, where a character, some major shit goes down with the character. And it's like, not to be, it's like they're too afraid to have any kind of impact at all, you know? It's like, okay, if you can't break the ship and have a flying, on Voyager, if you can't like have a flying runabout and escape pod armada, okay, well, at least do something that's going to have a lasting effect on their emotion. But yeah, it's probably too hard to continue that characterization. Like you said, they can't just sort of place people, because even when they don't do that much, you still get what you're saying. Like, they sort of repurpose people to do different kinds of things.
Reiterating the reiteration.
I like that.
We are thorough.
I like that. Garrett goes, he's pickpocketing. It's only a hobby.
Yeah, like, I know. One of those great things. And he says it all bitterly. He's like, it's just a hobby.
Yeah, and you're just wondering, what does he really mean? How much does he know? I must be incorrigible. It was like pretty awesome when he was like learning about himself. I must be incorrigible. That's a pretty good line too.
I think most people could watch this episode having never seen any Deep Space Nine, and of course they would be missing some of the flavor of it, but I think the story holds as a unified thing. I think people could understand enough of what's going on to really get what the points are from the story. Now, I could be wrong. I think it's a debatable point, but it's just, I make the point because more modern serialized stuff like Discovery or Picard, both of which I really enjoy, they do have the difficulty of, what are you going to do? Just pop in like, you know, episode 5 of Picard. That's a good one.
Yeah.
But it's a little weird to be like, all right, I'm just gonna watch that one as opposed to watching the whole story through. Whereas with Deep Space Nine, they started on the road to serialization, but they were still in a mode where most of these episodes could be just plucked out, watched, and thoroughly enjoyed and thoroughly understood, which is key, I think, too, without having watched anything else.
Right, and that episode's an example because you don't have to know that Odo just had his goo taken away from him, although it enhances it if you do, but you don't really need to know that. But you just understand some more significance of stuff if you do. So, but the story stands. You ever wondered what a gull was?
Isn't that like a captain?
It's like a moth.
It is like a moth.
Oh, yeah. What is it, like a Darth?
Like a governor.
It's not like a Darth.
No, not like a Darth. It's not like some sort of Jedi business.
So it's a Cardassian military rank and title positioned in the Cardassian hierarchy between Glynn and Legate or
Legate.
Legate. Okay. Legate. I was gonna say Legate. It's Legate.
That's a Roman term.
They were often I'm stupid. They were often.
No.
You said that like no. Really?
It's okay.
I will never say that.
It's okay.
No, he was more like no. Really, nobody knew that. They were often those officers
That's
who served.
That's not how I said.
I'm going to think that you did from here on out, so fuck you. They were often those officers who served as the commander of a vessel from warships down to freighters, a space station, or a labor camp. That is from Memory Alpha fandom. So I just thought that was interesting, because it's like these sort of arbitrary kind of terms are not arbitrary. They mean something, but it's like language, right? They mean something.
It's an alien language.
It's something subtle. There's something subtly different, maybe. Although an admiral is probably an admiral, but you know.
Well, I mean, you make the point. You know, there's a difference between admiral and general.
Not.
Forget about the rank. It's more about like what are they overseeing? What you know, there's a different vibe to it.
And what if you're like what if you're the military person that oversees all the bug creatures? You know, that's a different thing altogether.
Yeah,
that's a totally new thing.
Yeah.
Well, and you know the
Zerbert,
first class Zerbert.
The Cardassians are, you know, they're a culture that has to deal with, they're a very militaristic culture, but they also have to deal with the Obsidian Order, and it's similar in some ways to the Romulans with the Tal Shiar, but you know the Tal Shiar seems to be a little bit more like working behind the scenes stuff, like, you know, Section 31 style, like they're involved. Everyone knows about them, maybe, or a lot of people, but like, you know, they're up to their schemes and stuff. But the Obsidian Order seem to be a little bit more like, no, we in the military are sort of constantly at the risk of clashing, even though we're ostensibly helping each other. We're really like, we'd be keen to fuck each other up.
I like that idea to have these two sort of factions that exist under the same government, but they somehow, they're always at risk of destroying the other somehow.
It's more extreme in this example, but I think, of course, the same thing is true in the
organization,
in the U.S., in the FBI, in the CIA, in the NSA, and in England, you got the MI5 and the MI6, and you got the M22 and the A1 and the
and like U.S. military intelligence. The military's got their own intelligence.
Oh, that's right. Yeah. But anyway, so, you know, this was a really interesting episode, an interesting concept. You could call it a sci-fi concept because it technically is, but it basically, it's almost like a play where it's like, all right, it's like, Dan, like you said, it's like a sci-fi version of a dream episode, except it's impactful.
Yes.
So that's cool. And, you know, I really enjoyed watching it. Now, any last thoughts before we talk about what we'll do next week? Because I have an idea about that.
Yeah, it's a sci-fi episode, but it's not. It's one of those sci-fi, but not really sci-fi. It's just sort of a regular story. It's just a story, a good story.
It's regular old fi
with a sci-fi bow tie put on it. You know, it's not. You know, like talking about. It's not talking about how we were wearing out the space-time continuum by warping. That's some really high-level intelligent shit. You know, I don't know. I was half kidding. I don't know.
It's a pretty sci-fi concept, but they don't make a big deal about what's actually happening. Like the fact that it's just this sort of weird hallucination. Like that's not.
It just sort of says it.
That's not the point of the story.
All right. So that was Things Past. And next week, I was thinking if you guys are keen for it, we could do an Enterprise episode.
Right. Yeah. We haven't done that.
Haven't been back to Enterprise in a while.
Yeah. I'd be into that.
There's two potential episodes that are really good.
The one where Chip got pregnant.
No, that one's a good one too, actually. But we'll do that another time. There's one that I was thinking of that's kind of like Star Trek-y, and there's one that's more Enterprise-y. And the Star Trek-y one is one called Rogue Planet, where they go to some like planet that's like not around a sun or whatever, and there's some aliens go to that planet like and camp out there to hunt some sort of creatures in the woods. But then it turns out there's more to those creatures in the woods than meets the eye, and Captain Archer has a good time on that episode. The other one is called 2 Days and 2 Nights, and I believe it's also, I think it's a season one episode. But you can find it out there. 2 Days and 2 Nights. If you put that into Google, Enterprise will come up. And that's where they go to Risa for shore leave. And there's sort of different groups and sort of different storylines of people getting into sort of various antics on Risa. And it's an interesting episode. It's kind of fun. And
do you in general like Risa episodes?
See, that's the thing is... Not necessarily. I like when Picard goes and meets Vash. I think that's a fun
one.
That's
a good one. Yeah.
Is that the one where he has the statue that says he's down to down
the
clown?
The Horgon, I think it is.
Horgon.
Yeah, where Riker gives him the Horgon.
That sounds violent.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's a statue that if you put it out, it means you want to fuck.
Yeah.
But the Deep Space Nine Risa episode is, I don't think it's terrible. It's weak, especially by Deep Space Nine standards.
That's the one where Worf is all pissy at.
It's weak.
Jadzia.
Yeah, it's a little.
Oh,
weird.
Isn't that's the one that happens before this episode that we're speaking of in this podcast?
Odo and Kira do it on season 6, episode 20. So it was like about two seasons later, or one a little over one season later that they got together. It was season 6, episode 20.
Guess she got over it.
Good for them.
Yeah. Yes, she did. So,
all right. So toss a coin. Which one do you want to do? Enterprise, Rogue Planet, or 2 days and 2 nights?
I like the sound of Rogue Planet. That's a nice sounding title.
How about you, Dan? You cool with that?
Sure.
All right. So next week, we're going to talk about Enterprise, the episode Rogue Planet. I forgot to look it up. I think it's a season 1 episode, but I can't remember. But anyway, you can find it.
It's, according to Wikipedia, it's the 18th episode, so that's probably season 1.
Yeah, season 1, episode 18, Rogue Planet. We will discuss that episode of Enterprise next week. It's season 1 episode. Enterprise was overlooked a lot at the time, I think because of various things going on that complicated its presence on the air. But it's very much a show worth watching. And I personally think the season 1 is pretty darn strong. It's not like all like super classic episodes, but just as storytelling and world building goes, I thought it was just very, very interesting. And
Enterprise started getting these weird like four or five parters, these kind of quarter seasons.
Yeah, like in the fourth season.
Yeah, and sometimes it was like, oh man, I have to deal with more of this shit for the next episode. And
yeah.
I don't know. Some days they were good.
Oh no, Enterprise has flaws and dealt with some challenges for sure. You know, the third season is, for me personally, you know, a little bit problematic because it turned into kind of, hesitate to use the word jingoistic because that's a little bit strong, but it was a very heavy-handed 9/11 analogy. And not that that's bad. I think that makes sense. That was the zeitgeist. It was the zeitgeist, but it can be handled well and it can be handled poorly and it can be handled sort of mediocrely. My recollection is it was somewhat mediocre, but yeah. I'll have to go back and check it out at some point. But anyway, that's what we'll do next week.
If anybody has any ideas for us for future podcasts, give us some ideas.
Yeah, Dan is going to develop some sort of computer algorithm it'll analyze. What is it going to do? It's going to analyze the audio.
It was going to analyze the audio, and I was going to pick a certain point in the thing, like our wrap up session, analyze that audio and compare it against.
That's what we're doing right now.
And compare it against a database full of Star Trek.
And episodes. I was going to interrupt it every time I could possibly interrupt Dan speaking. I was going to just
That was clever, Jesse. What you just did just then. That was very clever what you did, interrupting me during what
I was
saying.
It's going to go into the algorithm.
Yeah.
And then somehow this algorithm processes that information and spits out like a season and an episode number and like a show number.
Yeah, because there'll be a database with all the dialogue, all the descriptions, all the titles. I don't know if I'm going to get all that. Probably just the descriptions. Who knows? It's probably easier just to get the descriptions.
I had suggested
that might be some confirmation bias, though.
This is the cleverness and the madness of Dan.
I guess that's the whole point is confirmation bias.
The cleverness and the madness of Dan is that I had merely offhandedly suggested that it would be interesting if he created some sort of algorithm to help us pick which episode or movie to watch next. And in my mind, I had some sort of like a, you know, D&D dice rolling algorithm, like just pick some numbers. But Dan was like, yeah, he immediately was like, yeah, what we'll do is we'll analyze the audio and we'll match it up to a database of the scripts of the shows. I was like, I don't even know what you mean. I'm not sure how those two connect. Like, would it be like the prevalence of the words in our podcast versus the prevalence of
words?
See,
that's where the algorithm sort of develops itself, where I sort of work on that over time. Not that it makes itself, codes itself, just saying, I figure out what's going on and add more.
I one day Dan is going to go into business for himself, and on his business card, it's at the bottom, the slogan for the company, for Danco, for Bitsco, is it's going to say, and that's where the algorithm starts to develop itself.
Yeah.
Can I get a job at Danco?
Sure can.
Yeah.
Awesome.
You can be my resident.
Can I just be like your assistant?
Resident assistant. You can be my resident assistant.
That's awesome.
Associate. Associate assistant is what
resident
you'll be. An associate assistant. Yeah, I'll take that.
I think means you're lower, I think, doesn't it?
Yeah. That means there's a bunch of other assistants and I'm an associate.
You're just an associate.
You're just associated with them.
Me and a bunch of other like 20-somethings.
Spooky Movie Film Festival. That's what I was trying to say earlier. I felt bad for butchering that. That was out in the Cinema Arts. It used to be in the Cinema Arts Theater in Fairfax. So
cool. Yeah. All right. Anyway,
I felt bad about butchering that earlier.
So
please don't cut that
Bobo
out.
Go.
We appreciate you listening this far.
Curtis.
Through this nonsense. We look forward to you listening to us again next week. And Dan is going to tell you where you can contact us.
He's going to tell you where to go.
YouTube.com. If you just search for It's Got Star Trek, you'll probably find a link somewhere that looks correct.
It's Got Star Trek.
And you click on that, and if it's not the one, you find the other one.
You know you've got a good it's marketing setup.
It's Got Star Trek.
When it's a paragraph description, to get you, it's like, all right, you go down that road, yeah. You take a left,
yeah.
Past the house with can't the pink balloons
it.
On the...
You can't miss it.
You yeah. can't.
YouTube, all right, we got YouTube.
And hashtag, it's got... No, at. It's at.
Oh, you can't miss YouTube.
At, well,
you can't, at
it's got Star Trek. Trek, and that's on the Twitter. And we've got a Facebook group and an Instagram.
Yeah, and it's all It's Got Star Trek.
Instagram.
We make this shit real easy, mm-hmm. right? We make it easy so you have no excuse.
It's Got Star Trek at feedback.com.
It's all about clicking.
No.
You get on the internet and you start clicking.
Clicking and dicking.
Feedback at itsgotstartrek.com is, in fact, the mailing address.
Feedback at itsgotstartrek.com. That's what I said.
No, you said itsgotstartrek@feedback.com.
Oh. Okay. Well, you know, don't do that. Do it the way he said.
Don't do that.
Don't do that.
Yeah.
Feedback at itsgotstartrek.com.
Itsgotstartrek.com.
Because we don't live at feedback.
You
we
people
live
listen
we live
to Star
at
Trek.
It's Got Star Trek.
Any one of those. Work.
You people listen to Star Trek. You're smart. You can infer that our website is going to be itsgotstartrek.com. I have enough faith in you to believe that you can infer that. So in the future, I may just sometimes not even mention that and just assume you could find it. I don't know why you would. It's much better to listen to us on, you know, iTunes or Overcast or Pocket Casts or, I don't know, Google Podcasts or Spotify
or
Stitcher or, you know, all that business, all the podcast business. You can find us, but you already know that because you're listening to us.
Hopefully, yes.
You might be listening to us on the webpage, but that would be, I don't know. I don't know. That's kind of weird.
I don't know about that Stitcher.
You can feel free to do it. Yeah, they might advertise.
They got super popular. Okay, fine.
I agree.
I'm not going to censor myself based on.
I agree we should be immediately suspicious of anything that's popular.
No, I mean, I've used it, and it's like, I don't know why it got so popular.
Anyway, we look forward to talking to you next week through the speakerphones. So, it's good night from Patrick, and then good night from who else is over
good
there?
Night from Jesse.
There's Jesse.
And my name's Dan.
And that guy's
my
name
is Dan Globitz, and I talk like this.
that was exactly Jesse right. lying to the audience.
Till next week, have a good evening.
Didn't you hear me? I'm offering you work. What are you waiting for?
No, nothing. Just show us the way.
Open it. Start by stepping through the gate that the nice man has opened for you. Very good. You three must be warp engineers. Now we're going to walk down the promenade to the bar. Would you like me to hold your hands or can you manage it?
We'll manage.
I'm so glad.
How much damage would it do to the timeline if Quark were to suffer a mysterious accident?
I'm not sure. But maybe we should conduct a little experiment and find out.